listening to From the Terraces on Cambridge 105.
Good evening to everyone on this Sunday evening. Excuse the voice, I am losing the voice. I shouldn't have sat here with this microphone with actually the voice I've got, but hopefully it'll last the whole show. So welcome to From the Terraces this week on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. Do get in touch with us all the usual ways. You can email us on terraces@cambridge105.fm. You can text us on 07919 070 490. You can tweet us at Terraces 105. You can find us on Facebook, that's it really. So do get in touch with us, especially if you've got something to say, because as anyone who's been following the football will realise that since we did the 1 hour Sunday show last week followed by the 3 hour show on Monday, there's actually only been one game of football, which was Histon at the weekend. Other than that, St Neots haven't played, United haven't played, City haven't played.
Nope.
In fact, the first game will be the Braintree game on Tuesday, won't it?
Yeah, with a bit of luck that'll be going ahead.
We'll be replaying some of the material from the marathon show. We've got the Brian Page interview up later, and we've got some bits from Jez's absolutely fantastic. We were really impressed actually with Jez in the studio. We'd expected him for 20 minutes and he stayed for an hour and 15 minutes. I think he was late to his five-a-side football.
Mm-hmm. And there's some really interesting things he was talking about.
Yeah.
And Brian was excellent as well, Brian Page at Histon.
So, and I don't think we can actually hear you, Tom. You want to try that one again?
Not really, no.
we'll get there in the end.
Yeah.
So we'll make a start then as soon as I can find. I've found a jingle, so we can start make a start on Cambridge United. And there we go. So Cambridge United, nothing to talk about. Well, actually, no, there is, of
no,
course,
loads to
Chris
talk about.
Maxwell.
Yeah,
let's talk
exactly.
about Chris Maxwell first.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess most people will have seen the... it started, but there's been no official announcement from the club, has there? I've not seen anything.
No, but what's happening is going on at Twitter at the moment. And the whole thing is quite interesting because Cambridge United have got a policy where they will they'll only release information officially when a deal is done, signed, sealed, delivered, done and dusted, and all those other cliches. And you can understand why they do that, and they feel very strongly that that's in the best interest of the football club. You know, it means that it gives them the best chance of getting the best deal for the football club. So nothing has come out of the football club officially in terms of Chris Maxwell and in terms of Kwesi Appiah either. You know, United have just said, you know, via Richard Money or Jez George, saying that, you know, these are obviously very good players and they'll do everything they can to keep them, which is what you'd expect.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on Twitter, Chris Maxwell is saying, looks like he's not coming back to Cambridge and is...
He didn't even say that, did he? He just basically said something that was, so long and thanks for all the fish, as the as the famous radio show goes.
He does say that, and then, but today he's tweeted that he's not coming back to Cambridge United as far as he knows. He's got that kind of, I can't remember the exact phrase, but it's something along those lines. But then he's also tweeted a picture of the back of his car with some bags in it and a PlayStation, and the tweet says back on the road up, you know, back on the M6 or something like that. And
yeah.
So obviously, you know, if he lives somewhere near Fleetwood and you come back to Cambridge, then you'd be going down the M6. But equally, the M6 goes to a whole load of other places other than Cambridge as well.
There's quite a few places between Fleetwood and Cambridge.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Cambridge United fans everywhere are getting somewhat nervous about the whole situation. Mm.
So let's assume for the sake of discussion, because we've got 40 minutes to fill, that he is going rather. So how much are we going to miss him if he goes?
Chris Maxwell's an excellent keeper, though, isn't he?
He is fantastic.
He's an excellent keeper, and I think you've made the point in the marathon show last week that Cambridge United are playing below their level, mm-hmm. if you like, Is that right? Below their level. So yeah. that team should be playing at a higher level. Because that was the thing. And that's something Richard Money said.
Yeah, I was
going to
say in the interview that we couldn't broadcast because it was corrupted, Richard Money made it that he said the only thing that's wrong with the club, because we were talking generally about the club, but he said the only thing that's wrong with the club is its first team isn't playing at the level it should be.
Yeah. And
he was hugely proud of everybody that's done what they've done at Cambridge.
Well, I think he's probably very proud of the first team as well. And if you look at those players, then that team should be playing at a higher level. But Chris Maxwell is one of those players, and it may well be. And bearing in mind he's not contracted by Cambridge United, it may be easier for him to find a club at a higher level. I mean, all that's conjecture, but he's done a very good job at United, and he will be missed. What's also happened is that Jason Brown has also tweeted suggesting that he's not going to be at Cambridge United for he said he's tweeted that he's enjoyed his month. And so that all sounds very past tense to me. And so, and I think, United fans would have expected that Jason Brown was there, getting used to the Cambridge way, if you like.
Is that like the Histon style?
Jason was getting used to the, Cambridge United's way of doing things with Richard Money knowing that Chris Maxwell's loan period was up at the end of January, so if in the occasion that Chris Maxwell wasn't going to be able to stay, then you've got somebody on hand who's an experienced keeper, a good keeper, and is a well-known face about the place, and so he could slot in. But then, according to Jason's Twitter this morning, it doesn't really look like he's going to be around.
And then we've lost Will Norris. Is it Will Norris? Yeah, he's out at Royston, isn't he?
He's on loan at Royston, and Will Norris, is a young keeper. Obviously, has a lot of potential. May not be the sort of player that Richard Money and is looking for. Looking to step straight in there, but it does mean that Cambridge United at the moment, if all the rumours to believe, are short on goalkeepers.
Yeah. Which is quite an important position not to have somebody to slot in.
It's interesting as well, because one of the things, if you look at, who we've had, and this is going to sound really awful for I won't mention any names because I think everyone will figure it, is that one of the problems with the keepers we've had in the past is that Chris Maxwell has made a massive, massive difference, not only because he's a great shot stopper, but his distribution from the back. Yep. I mean, he was the first keeper I've seen in probably two or three seasons who seemed to actually want to throw the ball out quickly and use his back four to get the ball up the pitch. I mean, he's got a great kick, but he was very good at distributing the ball quickly and starting the counter-attacks. And I think that's what we'd missed over previous keepers.
Yeah, he does offer that, and he's also a very sort of calming influence as well. I think you can see the defence trust him. He's vocal. He talks to them. Everybody knows where they are, and right the way through the spine of that team, there are people like that. There's Ian Miller, there's Tom Champion as well, who know what they're about, and keep the others on track, if you like. And so, he will be a miss, but. And you're absolutely right, Chris. It's an important position. You can't really go onto the pitch without a goalkeeper. But having said that, and there's a game on Tuesday. But we haven't heard the official story from United yet. All this is about what's been said on Twitter, Rich. Richard Money and all the other people behind the scenes at Cambridge United, they're not stupid. And, if they've got, they're unlikely to be letting Cambridge United get into that, into a crisis situation here. Because, the arrangement with Maxwell was due to finish. In fact, I think it finished on Saturday. The arrangement with Brown was due to finish fairly soon as well. So they'd have known that this was coming up. This isn't going to take them by surprise.
No. Yeah.
As fans, we don't know what the answer is. But... I'm sure Richard Money isn't scratching his head wondering what the answer is, because I'm sure he's got an idea what's going on.
Yeah, he must have. Given, as you say, there's a game on Tuesday, he's got to have a keeper somewhere.
He's got to have a keeper, and it ain't going to be me.
It'd be like the Mars. Oh, am I allowed to say Mars on this? But it'd be like the Mars advert. You can just step out from the crowd and play.
Yeah,
any volunteers?
Yeah, well, I'm sure Liam Hughes has done that job before, so you know, it might be him.
He's played everywhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, as you say, there is an answer to the problem. We just don't know what it is yet, and we can speculate as much as we want about what's going on Twitter.
I think it's important. I think to sort of notice that difference, if you like, that, you know, Cambridge United will only talk about things when it's black and white, when it's done and dusted, and when it's all completely finalised. People on Twitter will talk about all the little grey areas in between, you know, and players will do that. And meanwhile, as Cambridge United fans are kind of left a little bit confused, but we're left confused by the things that we don't know. Mm. And there will be people behind the scenes, you know, the people in charge, like Richard Money, you know, they're going to know what's going on a lot more than us. So, although it might be difficult, we just have to kind of trust them a little bit on that, I think.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about any other rumours that we're hearing?
I don't know any other rumours, to be frank. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess the other big position at the moment at United is up front, isn't it? Interesting movements last week when Delano Sam York and Mitch Austin were both loaned out to Lincoln,
which again goes back to this suggestion that obviously Richard Money knows exactly what's going on and what he's doing. But it is interesting that we're looking for another striker. It was in the evening news, an interview he gave. And at the same time, we're putting Sam York and Mitch Austin into a loan position, which seems to be counterintuitive almost.
Well, that's it. I mean, either he's got absolutely no idea what he's doing and he's just letting all these players go in vital positions.
Yeah. Unlikely, or, it has to be said.
Yeah, or he's actually got a plan. And on the evidence so far, I think he's probably got a plan. But, but I just don't know what it is.
Exactly. And the thing is, obviously, as you said, we don't know what's going on, but plans don't always go according to plan, do they? So you never know. Things could be unravelling and we just don't know they are.
No.
I'd like to think they're not, as you say.
They're certainly not unravelling.
No.
It's just obviously that we don't know what's going on. And there's a frustration creeps in. And the interesting thing was in the interview that we couldn't broadcast, one of the things Richard said, he said that the football forums are the bane of every manager's life now. I can understand, I think every spectator who pays to go and see a game has a right to say what they want to say about the club, good or bad.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place to shout it from the terraces. And I think he was right in his criticism of the way some of the fans were behaving, but there's a sense of frustration that creeps in when people see what's going there. People don't obviously get the full story because it's not happened yet.
Mm.
You see bits on Twitter, you hear rumours around the ground, around the place, and then they're all expanded on in the fans' forums.
Mm.
Whether it's even vaguely close to reality or not is anybody's guess in most cases. But it's always going to happen. It's not going to go away. Now the medium's here. It's going to be used.
Yeah, that's it. It's the sort of thing that those conversations used to happen in pubs, between two or three people, over a pint, just two or three people listening, and you'd sit there in a pub and think, oh, what is going on? I don't know, la di da di da, and happening in private is a very different thing to when it's happening in public and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people are reading it, listening in. And particularly if it's particularly the managers are listening in as well.
Yeah.
And so what you get is, one or two, you get a few loud voices which are taken to be valid opinions. Mm. and really that may not actually be the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and Jez, but Jez was in the studio on Monday talking about the transfer policy. For the upcoming transfer windows as well, and you had a few interesting things to say about how a football club approaches you know, a transfer window and how Cambridge United might be doing that.
Should we listen to that one? Hopefully I've got the right one, but hopefully this is Jez George talking about the transfer window.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the squad is probably a little bit more further along than what you and Richard actually expected? I mean, I know you've talked about like the Tom Elliott factor, obviously, being where we were without Tom Elliott. And, you know, Richard Money's obviously said that a few times. But is it a surprise? Because obviously a lot of players came in. You know, was it a surprise to you that they gelled so quickly to start off with?
I think it's testament to how thorough we were in recruiting. And also to Richard's coaching ability, to be perfectly honest, because I think if you have the wrong person in charge in terms of the work that's done Monday to Friday, and it's the work that, let's be honest, no one sees except us. You know, I see the work that goes on the training ground, and I know the work that goes on with Richard and the rest of the staff. I think that's the testament and an indication of how good Richard is as a coach, because he's got a group of players that, in his head, when he's working out the jigsaw puzzle of what the team's going to look like, these are the players that, having, you know, watched and gone for an exhaustive program, really, of or process of selection, that we've ended up signing. And we've been really happy that, if you take us back to that summer with limited resources, you know, we didn't sign players because we had a bigger checkbook than anyone. We didn't sign players because we had more money. We signed players because we were clever, I think, in who we recruited from. No disrespect to the likes of the Tamworths of this world and the Dartfords and the Gateshead's, but we didn't go after players at clubs who paid bigger wages than us. And we were successful in almost selling them the vision of how we wanted to move the club forward. Recruitment was good because we got pretty much every single one of our targets. But then I think because Richard's such a good coach, he's managed to gel that into a unit really, really quickly. And I think you could even see that in pre-season. I think pre-season was a little bit of an indicator of how we would progress. So you're right in terms of from where we were last year to where we are now has been a massive step forward. And it might have happened a little bit quicker than we'd all expected or hoped. But now we are where we are, we want to push on again, because I think that's the most important thing. You have to constantly look to evolve the club, both on and off the pitch, and that's the next task, is trying to come out of January stronger than when we went into January or going into January. And I think that's the key to every transfer window, is if you can come out stronger than you go in, then the club's moving in the right direction.
So that's, I mean, it's interesting what he... We're having problems in the studio here. Normally the fallback goes off when you fade the microphones up, but it's not, and so we're getting this horrendous looping going on.
So basically, you know, listeners, if you can imagine, we can hear what we're saying in the studio about a second after we say it. And have you ever had that sort of experience on a phone, for example, when it's talking back at you and you just want to punch the thing, don't you? Well, it's a little bit like that in the
studio.
And
I hate hearing my own voice, so it's quite annoying.
Well, I hate hearing your voice as well.
I know, most people do.
Yeah, I was going to say, we all do, Chris, but don't worry about it.
But anyway, I mean, it's interesting what Jez is saying there, and saying about going, you want to come out of a transfer window stronger than how you went in. And again, I guess, you know, fans will be conscious of that as well. And, you know, having... You know, potentially, if rumours are to believe, we've lost, you know, already this transfer window, we've lost a winger, a centre forward, and two goalkeepers. Then, you know,
got a lot of ground to make up.
Then fans will be wondering what the, you know, how we're going to achieve that. And there are, you know, so, but you know, as I said before, you know, this won't come as a surprise to Jez, and certainly, you know, the two, you know, the centre forward, the winger, and at least one of the goalkeepers have been released, it seems, by under the club's control, if you like. They've allowed those people to leave, and so, you know, there will be a plan.
I think you can look at it from the other. I'm actually hugely excited by what's going to happen, because, you know, we had such a fantastic summer, you know, summer holidays with all the signings we got. And
it's great, wasn't it?
The point was made that we went for X. We got X minus one actually signed for us, or whatever it was. So you know, we got everybody we were looking for virtually in the summer transfer window, and then. No disrespect to the signings that we had. There was Gillies, there was
Ledgham.
And they came into the club and they were only here for a month. And I'm not sure, apart from the trophy, that they actually played. Gillies didn't he?
Yeah, Gillies has played a few. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Gillies
But he was only here for a month, so when's his month up? You see, again, I'm not...
Yeah, I don't know exactly when his month is up, but I wouldn't be surprised to see United trying to keep him. Ledsham, it seems, has gone back to Southport, and Pierre has gone back to Brentford, I think it was, as well. So, you know, you can add those to the players that we've lost, actually. And yeah, so it might be that, you know, we're down to having lost six or seven.
Do you think we can actually field a team on Tuesday? That is going to be a problem for us.
I don't think it'll be a problem at all.
I think it's hugely exciting to see what the plans are that are there.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly, there's definitely more strength we can put in there. In strength in depth, it's not that we're missing a player in any particular position, but
apart from
goalkeeper now. Yeah.
you're right. And if you look at the evidence so far, and Richard Munn is all wheeling and dealing on the transfer market, he's done very well for us. And so although we don't know the answers, I'm sure they've got an idea of what's going on, a much more idea than what we have.
That might be an opportune moment, because one of the complaints, and one of the comments that are made when you look at the money that's come in from BT and you know, the FA Cup and that, was that, you know, why aren't we out there buying ex Premier League players? You know, we've got a fortune in the bank and everything.
Jez
made some interesting comments about budgeting. So let's have a listen to that.
One of the great things about the success as well is obviously with the average crowds have been going up and up and up, which brings more money into the club. And then we've had several appearances on the telly. I think the Boxing Day game, I think so far has been the most viewed, 180,000 viewers, BT Sport was saying, for that game, which again brings more money in. And then to counter that, there's a lot of talk, you know, from the terraces and everywhere else of, oh, we should be signing this person or that person, all this money's coming in. But it's obviously not as simple as that. That money doesn't translate just into free money to give away.
I think what people have to realise is that if we wanted to have a budget that had no risk in it whatsoever in terms of level of performance, we'd probably get relegated, because the budget would be so small. You'd end up in a situation where you're struggling on the pitch because you can't sign the players we did in the summer. Mm-hmm. Now, what we've tried to do is be sensible and realistic with everything. So we've not put the club in any risk financially, but what we have had to do is set a budget at a level that gives us a chance to compete. So therefore, we know that we have to perform on the pitch for those average crowds to push up, for the whole thing to make sense, because it's very unusual, this industry, where you set your expenditure, but your income is so fluctuating depending on performance.
Yeah.
So, you know, we made some decisions with the board at the start of the season where we set a realistic budget, nowhere near the top budgets in this league, you know, probably two or three times less than one or two, and certainly in the top half, but certainly not in the top four of budgets, but one that Richard and I felt give us a chance. But then we know that we've had to perform on the pitch because we've needed that average crowd to get up, and we need to increase income to make that budget sustainable. Now, we've done that, but it doesn't create huge surpluses at all. And what you've also got to realise is, you know, how many years has this club been posting losses?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and what that does to your cash flow. So even if we have a season where genuinely, without a sale or without directors putting a huge amount of money in, that the club actually can get to a break-even position, it takes a little time for that to actually, start to make an impact on the cash flow situation, whereby there's still times of the year that are very, very difficult. And even when crowds are up, we've had 12 games out of 23. We need to sustain that. And then by the time we get to the end of the season, the club could be in a much better and stronger financial position than it's been for a long time. But our way of going about our business won't change at all. You know, we make sure we get value for money in everything we do. People need to realise that the deals we got for Maxwell and Appiah at the start of the season were really unbelievable in terms of what we've had to contribute financially. You know, in terms of what we've paid for those players, the value we've got from them, very difficult to do lots and lots of deals like that.
Yeah.
And we're fortunate that we managed to do them. We've worked really hard with the players in the summer that we've recruited and fought for every £50, in order to keep the wage bill under control and to make sure that there's a ceiling and a structure and that we won't deviate from that. And what that does is it creates a togetherness within the changing room, because they know there's not one or two on double the money, and they know that we don't throw money around. And, you know, they all know, because we've negotiated so hard, that no one's here for money. they're here because they want to be part of something. So the absolute worst thing we can do in January is deviate from that plan.
Yeah.
You know, we can't go out and spend loads of money because, A, we haven't got it, and, B, if we did, it wouldn't improve the group enough to counter the disruption it would cause within the group.
Mm.
So I think we've just got to make sure we're continually evolving. There's never a situation where we suddenly rip up the plan and start again. There's no reason to do that. We've just got to add intelligently to the squad we've got. We've got to make decisions as we go as to the players who are going to take us forward and the players who aren't. And then we've got to do our best to keep improving. So I think it's going to be gradual, and there's not going to be huge money thrown out. It's very difficult to sign players in January, good players, because the best players, the club won't let them leave.
Yeah.
Unless you pay ridiculously over the odds. We haven't got the money to pay ridiculously over the odds. And when you do pay a huge transfer fee, you then got to pay huge wages.
Yeah.
And then it takes that player out of kilter with every single other player at the club.
Mm.
So if you do it, you know you're going to have a queue of 15 players the next day, all wanting their contracts reviewed. Mm. And then you put yourself in a position financially where you can't do it.
Yeah.
And the one thing I think the club has got to be is long-term sustainable. You know, I remember the last time I was at Wembley for a playoff final. By the time the following season started, the manager wasn't in situ. Half the players weren't in situ. The budget was dramatically different. And the club never finished in, or wasn't in the top half of the table for the whole year. I think we've got to make sure that whilst we're totally ambitious to do everything we can this year to get promoted, we've got to make sure it's not at the expense of the next year and the next year and the next year.
Yeah, interesting words from Jez. And I think it is very easy to get carried away with, you know, TV money and FA Cup and everything else. But
yeah, I mean, it was interesting because Macclesfield are obviously doing well in the FA Cup at the moment, and you know, they're all over Football Focus, and you know, the director, one of the directors at Macclesfield, was asked, well, what does this FA Cup game mean to you? And he says, well, it might mean that we can pay the wages next month, and you know, though Cambridge United aren't in that position anymore, it may well be they've been in the recent past, and you know, they are still in a position where actually that extra money is very important for the day-to-day running of the football club, but balancing that off against the need for success on the pitch, because you know, going up would obviously make a huge difference financially to the stability of the club as well. So you know, and Jez was kind of sort of talking around that particular you know, that particular issue as well, I think, and saying that, you know, they're not going to be out there spending stupid money, and in any case, it's difficult to find good players at this particular moment in time because they're all tied up with their clubs. And so, if you're a good player with a club, then your club's not going to want to see and go, particularly if that club's getting a little bit squeaky about promotion or relegation.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got Jez. I mean, as Jez was saying, he was here for 70 minutes by the time he finished. Mm-hmm. So he was also talking about the stadium. I guess that's probably a good thing to pick up.
Well, that's it. Talking about the, you know, because the stadium is you know, sort of leading quite nicely on from the business side of the football club as well. And you know, there's a plan A, the initial plan, which was to build a whole all singing, all dancing stadium and sports village in Trumpington. And then that's recently been joined by a plan B, which is that the football club stay at the Abbey, but the sport village still gets built in Trumpington. And Jez was talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, and it's always one. I mean, I guess it'd be interesting to see, but I guess if you ask most people on a Saturday afternoon, most of them would actually favour staying at the Abbey because it's the Abbey, rather than moving out of town. And you know, it may be fantastic for future development, but it's further than a lot of people are already travelling. But let's see what he's got. When I get this, let's see what he's got to say about that.
One thing that's always on people's minds is obviously the community stadium and its plans. Is there any update about it at all? Obviously the plans have changed, but you know, you've been in support of it, haven't you, recently? You know,
Listen, we've worked with Grosvenor for a number of years now, and listen, I think first of all we should continue to put on record that without them I don't think the club would be in business. In all honesty, you know, there's two or three people over a long period of time have really helped this club, and Paul Barry over a number of years, and two or three other directors currently on the board, And then in the last 18 months, Dave Doggett, unbelievably, and I know that he's been on your show before and you see plenty of him, and he wears his heart on his sleeve and he shows his passion for the club, but no more so by the fact that, you know, he works full-time plus for nothing, and the amount of financial backing he's given the club when it's needed it. So I think Paul and Dave and a number of directors need a huge amount of credit, but also Grosvenor do as well, because if they charged us the rate or the rent that they could have done over the last 3 or 4 years, we'd be in all sorts of trouble. So I think, number one, we should thank them for that publicly and make people understand that. And from day one, I think they've been pretty clear in their vision, which is to try and put the club on an even keel financially and help us to move on into the future. Obviously, they're developers. They've got to make some money out of it.
Yeah, of course.
But not at the... how can I say it? You know, not the exclusion of the club benefiting from it as well. Not being detrimental to the club. That was the word I was looking for. Yeah. So I think we're really supportive of anything that they're trying to do for us. Plan A was going to be, wasn't it, you know, the fantastic stadium with the training ground next door to it. That obviously hits a lot of opposition, and we understand why. And you look at option B, maybe in some supporters' minds, option B is even better than option A, because it keeps the club in the same place. From our perspective, as long as option B gives us financially some viability in terms of facilities that we need at the stadium, and in terms of the Youth and Community Trust and the football department, gives us a base in terms of a training ground and the facilities where we can develop that work, then it's a great option for us. Mm-hmm. And without a doubt, option B is much better than no option at all. Mm-hmm. So I think we just need to work with them. And the big job we've got to do in 2014 is to convince the people of Cambridge at large, and most importantly, the authorities, that there is a need for it, that we're pretty sure we can demonstrate, and that this is the best solution. And when you think about, when you explain it to people outside of Cambridge, that the city of Cambridge could have a fantastic facility that would cost the taxpayers nothing and is all privately funded and will put their professional football club on an even keel financially and provide a benefit for tens of thousands of kids over a number of years for the future, I would be saying it's a pretty strong argument that it should go ahead.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear a pretty strong argument that it shouldn't go ahead, apart from it inconveniencing a few people. Yeah. And I think it's something that we've really got to make sure we can create some momentum in the next 12 months and make it happen, because I think we'll let down, sounds a bit grandiose this statement, but I do think we would all let down the next generation of kids and people in this city if we let this opportunity pass. I think we've got to make sure it happens, and we all have that responsibility, not just the club.
Yeah, and the problem is it's quite hard to get that state, you know, that idea out. Hey, look, you know, it's not just for the football club, because everybody sees it and then they see Cambridge United attached to it and they think, oh, it's just for the basis of the football club.
Yeah, you're right, and I think that maybe with... if the plans show that the club could stay where we are and the number of other sporting organisations that will be involved in the sporting village, I think that's the message, you're quite right, that we really need to get out loud and clear that this is a facility for Cambridge and particularly for the youngsters within Cambridge to participate in sport. And when you talk about, you know, there's lots of grandiose statements made about Olympic legacy and how we've got to tackle the problems in society and people staying off the streets and crime rates and obesity and health. And sport tackles a lot of those problems, as I said before, because it makes people fit and healthy and active, and it teaches them respect and discipline. And I think that's the message that we've really got to get out there, that there's so many thousand kids especially can benefit from this facility. Of course, there's a benefit to Cambridge United, but that benefit to Cambridge United will be transferred to the community at large. And I think we've got to show we're working with a lot of other organisations, and this is a massive opportunity for the city. And I know that it's interesting, isn't it? Because Cambridge is so famous because of the university, maybe sometimes people think that we don't need anything apart from the university. But it's been interesting working with those. You know, we've worked with the Blues football team in the last few months, and the impact we've had on them and what they think of Cambridge United has been really strange to see.
Yeah.
You know, they've been really grateful for our input and really pleased to be attached to the club. So we've just got to get that message out that we're more than just a football club. We don't just open our gates once every fortnight and a couple of thousand people watch us. You know, we're active in the community. We work with a lot of these groups and we want to do more. And the only way we will do more is with new facilities.
Talking technicalities there in the studio. Oh, and a horrible echo again.
Right,
we'll change that one. So yeah. I mean, it is interesting what he's had to say.
Mm.
We were just talking while the interview was going on about, you know, would you prefer to stay? Would you prefer to go?
The plan A, plan B, as a Cambridge United fan, you know, would you rather go for the plan A, that first option of, you know, the brand new purpose-built stadium on the edge of town, right on the, what's it called? Right on the entrance to the city, or would you rather have the would you rather stay at the Abbey with all the tradition that it's got? And so, you know, and as Cambridge United fans, we're kind of left with that particular we're not left with that dilemma at all, because we don't have that option.
But
you know, we can have a preferred option there somehow.
As we said, there's a lot to be said for staying at the Abbey. It is like the traditional home. It is the spiritual home of Cambridge United. But great, if plan B, if plan A is, if the other alternative to that is having a purpose-built stadium on the run into the city, you know, right at the end of the M11, you're not going to complain about it. And you're certainly not going to stop supporting the team because they've moved to a different location. I mean, lots of teams do it.
Yeah, that's it. And there's evidence that actually teams' gates go up when they move to a new stadium. I think, did that happen to Leicester?
It did actually, to be fair, yeah. When Leicester moved from Filbert Street to what was then the Walkers Stadium, the average attendance was about 19,000-20,000 at Filbert Street, and then the first season, albeit we'd just been relegated, was easily 25,000-30,000.
Right.
You know, but yeah, it's a brand new stadium. But I was actually going to make the point that personally, I think that clubs should try and stay where the original stadium was. I was absolutely gutted when Leicester, albeit they just moved across the road from Filbert Street to the Walkers. But there was something about Filbert Street. It was an old, dilapidated stadium, but it had character.
Yeah. And all that history.
All those great players who had played for Leicester. Admittedly, you know, it was the chance to rebuild and start again with the brand new stadium. But, yeah, again, it might be just because I miss, you know, the glory days of Martin O'Neill and associating it with that stadium. Yeah. But
it's easier for me to get into the new stadium if that's where it happens anyway. So I'm all for it now.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, a lot of it will be about what's the best deal financially for the football club. But actually, what really will be driving it is what the planning authorities allow, what the local authorities allow, and what's best for Grosvenor. What we can be grateful for is that Grosvenor will want to put in a solution which is sustainable for all parties and all the people that will be inevitably paying them for the privilege of being at and using those facilities, and they want to put in a solution that's sustainable for Cambridge United to be successful in order to keep paying them. And so that's what we've got to be looking for.
I'm just a little bit worried that it would, moving from, you know, the Abbey, which is full of character, full of passion, full of history, and then you move to this new stadium, and yeah, true, you can build that character again, but for the first couple of years it could be just a characterless shell, and I don't want that to happen, because whenever you go to the Abbey, I love it. You know, the atmosphere is great. Yeah. The fans are great, and obviously they make the character, they make the atmosphere, but doesn't the stadium also contribute to that as well? I just don't want it to be just a characterless shell.
I think that's fair to say, but I think that, you know, clubs now are getting very good at helping to, you know, to transfer that and to develop, atmosphere in new stadiums. Brighton put a lot of effort into that, and that's something that I've been slightly involved with behind the scenes in another life. And so that's clubs can do that. And so, I'd hope that Cambridge United could do that, particularly if they're going to the new stadium on the back of some success, which is what we can all hope for.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about the only football that has actually happened since we were here last. Community radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
You're listening to From the Terraces on Cambridge 105.
When we come back, we'll be talking all things history.
Out in the country, far from all the subtle sort of noise of the city, there's a village green. It's been a long time since I
I last set eyes on the church with the steep hills down by the village green.
Oh, caught out again. That's Chris telling me what's going on. So professional. So yes. Histon, the only game, and it was a 3-2 win for Histon, which is
against
the
Workington.
Fourth game without defeat. So they've had, no, is it third or the fourth?
Fourth game without defeat. They've won two, drawn two. In fact, their unbeaten run kicked off when I went to see them against Bradford Park Avenue.
There you go. A plug. You should be going down, absolutely, down there, which leaves them, and I'm just checking now, 14. So they've moved up two or three places.
Yeah, they've moved up two places from the win yesterday against Workington, 3-2. And so, yeah, things are going quite nicely there, Fist, and they're pulling away from the relegation zone. If you look at, I keep saying it, but if you look at the names of the places and the teams that are below them, and you're looking at, you know, towns and cities like Worcester, like Stockport, you know, much bigger places than the village that Histon is, and you've got to say they're doing really well to be there.
Yeah, and I mean, I was just looking now, I mean, they've got a game in hand over Bradford, who are a point above them. They've got three games in hand over Vauxhall Motors, who were only 2 points ahead of them. And they've got a game in hand over Leamington, and are only 3 points ahead of them. Mm. So, you know, they could end up being, you know, another couple of good results. They could end up being mid-table, which would be fantastic.
That's it, and no mean achievement, bearing in mind that, you know, before their win against Bradford Park Avenue, which was, you know, just before Christmas, they hadn't won since the 26th of October. So they've gone, you know, a good 6-7 weeks without winning. And then, you know, and so they've had that winless run in the middle of the season. And they're still, you know, looking at a 14th, nice little place there.
It's good. Yeah. So we were lucky enough to get an interview with Brian Page.
Yeah, I went down to the ground.
Yeah, mm. Very, very impressed. Mm. Says it was really nice, but he offered to make me coffee, which is not something you often get. Much friendlier than Richard Money, it has to be said as well.
I wouldn't say that.
I think there'll be a mob outside after the show.
So let's listen to what Brian had to say on the show.
You took over from Dennis Green, I think it's fair to say, amid some controversy and some problems. And at the time, I think you were bottom of the league. How difficult was it? I mean, obviously you've had a long association with the club, so that was a bit easier, but how difficult was it to come in and kind of pull the first team together from the position they were in?
It was very difficult because at the beginning of last season I was due to take over for whatever reasons, my fault, the board's fault, a misunderstanding, whatever it was, it didn't work out, and they chose to bring Dennis in, and you know, for whatever reasons, it didn't work out. The team didn't perform and didn't pick up the results, which left them, when I came in at Christmas last year, with only 12 points. And I think we were 10 points adrift of safety. And it was difficult to watch because I'd known a lot of the lads from when they'd played in the team under David. And I knew that they were better than what they were performing in. If you speak to players, you speak to fans, you speak to coaches, everyone will have their opinion on why it wasn't working out. It just wasn't working. So when I came in, you know, the first thing I addressed was the players. You know, I said, we can't go blaming anybody else. You're the guys that go out there. You're the guys that put in the performances, and they haven't been good enough. And we need to address that. You need to be better. Mm. And it was hard because I knew what they were capable of. I knew they were capable of more. And I think once we addressed, you know, a few tiny, minor little details, the results started to come, and thankfully we stayed up.
And that was going to say, you managed to stay with a draw in the last game of the season. Last game of the season. I mean, how did that feel, actually, you know, coming from that position? It was a massive achievement.
It was an unbelievable achievement. Once I'd filled through the contracted players we still had and the players that had been in and gone, and we still had registered, and I think at one point we still had nearly 40 players registered when I came in. So we had to filter through that, and to stay up, even by, I think it was goal difference in the end, was a remarkable achievement because we only had 12 points at Christmas. We were 10 points adrift. I think there was a couple of teams that had games in hand on us as well. And for the young squad to put in the performances they were putting in and drag those points back and give ourselves a chance on the last day was just remarkable, and massive credit must go to those players for showing that. But I've just said it, when I came in, I knew they were capable of putting in those performances, and it was just getting them to believe that they could go out there and win football matches at this level. And credit to them, they went and done it.
Yeah, yeah. And how hard was it for you? I mean, you've been involved in the youth development for a while. How hard was it for you to transition into the senior team role? And is there a lot of difference in intensity in the way, you know, the way in training and the way with their play, or is that fairly similar?
No, there's a big difference, because, you know, I can come back into the office on a Saturday evening, and players not have performed well and the team not particularly have played well, and be really happy if we've got 3 points.
Mm.
You know, it's very different to the youth, where if they go and win a game but you felt that they haven't developed or they haven't performed in the way you want them to perform to get them to the end goal, which is into the first team and hopefully higher, you'll be disappointed. So there's a big difference. You know, the first team is all about winning games and getting 3 points. And sometimes you have to do that when you're not playing well. Sometimes you have to do that when you know, you've got a little bit of luck or the opposition have made mistakes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's very different to youth football, where you're trying to develop those players as individuals within their units and within the team structure to hopefully one day get into the first team. You know, on a daily basis, I have to wear two different hats. And even today, you know, the youth will train in the afternoon and the first team will train in the evening, and the youth will be based around developing them, where the first team will be based around getting the result against Boston on New Year's Day. So it's very different, but very enjoyable.
Okay. You had a mixed pre-season, but you started well and you got 14 points from 21 in the first 7 games, and you only lost once. But then you kind of hit a bad patch, picking up only 5 from 33 with 1 win. What went wrong? What was the difference?
Well, pre-season went exactly how we wanted it to. It was carefully planned and well orchestrated in terms of the teams we were playing and the number of minutes each player was getting. So when the first game of the season came and we started the season, I felt that we were more prepared than others, and I think that showed in the performances as we picked up vital points early doors. As teams started to find their feet in the league, you know, games got a little bit closer and little details, missed chances, little mistakes cost us when we started to have a little bit of a poor run. But at no point was I concerned about the performances. I felt the performances of the team were good. It was just the small details where we'd been taking chances at the start of the season and not making silly errors that just started to creep in, and that was what was costing us over that period where we struggled a little bit. But you know, we've addressed that, we've continued to work hard, we've continued to put in the performances that we were putting in at the start of the season, that we were putting in when things weren't going so well, and now the last 3 games, you know, we've taken points off 3 teams that were in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, you said, I thought in the Colwyn Bay defeat, you said despite the loss, you think they're turning the corner. And as you say, since then, you picked up 5 from 9. You had a win against Bradford Park, and then in quite a difficult Christmas and New Year fixtures against top teams. So you drew away at Boston, and then obviously the fantastic comeback against Brackley. What were those little details? What's changed?
Well, the Colwyn game was a game that we felt that we could really kick on from, and we felt that we could go and get the victory. And on the day, we didn't. But again, the performance was excellent. And where I felt we'd turned a little corner, it got misread. We certainly haven't turned the corner, because we still need to make sure we're picking up wins. But in the Colwyn Bay game, we were 1-0 down after playing quite well in the first half, and we had all the elements, and I mean, they were terrible conditions against us. And you know, a weaker team would have crumbled and maybe lost that game, you know, 3-4-0. But we stayed strong, and we actually created a lot of chances against the elements and against a very strong Colwyn Bay side that are doing well and are kicking in towards the playoffs. So I felt from that we could draw big heart and big confidence, because we proved to ourselves that we weren't going to just lay down and accept defeat and accept that we were going to get steamrolled week in, week out. And we took that performance into the Bradford game where I felt we were excellent from start to finish and deserved the 3 points. And we've actually had a decent Christmas period, and the Brackley performance Saturday was just unbelievable, because again I felt that we were the better side even when we were 2-0 down.
Yeah.
And for a side that has been struggling in terms of results, not performance, in terms of results, to bounce back from a 2-goal deficit twice, not against the struggling side, against a top team in this division, is just credit to the lads and that togetherness and determination they've got, and belief in what they're doing to come back. And now, hopefully, we can continue to kick on and hopefully give Boston a really, really tough game on Wednesday and try and take even more points off the top sides.
Yeah. I mean, it's a long run in now to the end of the season, and you've got still quite a young squad. Do you think you can, do you think they can maintain that? Have you got the strength in depth that you need to finish out the season?
Yeah, well, from the Boston game on Boxing Day to Saturday, I made 6 changes, 7 changes in the squad. We left players like Zach Mills, Grant Roberts out of the squad, and these are boys that have been magnificent. And Jay Dowie, Lewis Taff, Kane Shepherd, Harry O'Malley, all on the bench. So it just proves that we do have a decent squad, because we've gone and taken points off of fourth place, a team that could have gone second in the division. So I'm happy that our squad's very competitive now. Last year when I came in, we literally had the bare 11, and we were sending people out, who weren't even fully fit to play. But this year I have the luxury that I can leave people out, I can bring people in, and I know that it's not going to affect the team's performance. So very happy with the way the squad's panned out, and I'm sure that we can utilise that squad for the rest of the season.
And you've got a number of sort of youth development players now in the first team squad. How important is youth development to you at Histon, and how difficult do you find it taking on both roles from a youth development and a first team perspective?
It's massive for this football club. If you put it into context, I know 3 or 4 of the Brackley players very well. I've played with them prior to me retiring from playing, and I know what they're on, and there would be no way that I can bring them to this football club on the wages they're on at Brackley. So for us to develop our own and bring them through from the youth scheme is a must, because our budget wouldn't then be able to go out and buy the more experienced players. So it's massively important. And what I need to do heading up both the first team and the squad is just make sure I manage my time right, and make sure that when I'm working with the youth, I'm concentrating on what I'm doing at that aspect. And then once I've finished there, then I have to switch and put my first team head on and making sure that I'm concentrating on what I'm doing there. And as long as I'm managing my time, and as long as I build a good team around me, it's not a problem. The staff that I've got around me, from Ricky, my new assistant, Jack, who assists me with the youth side, James Algu does both sets of goalkeepers for me, Nick Wild, sports therapist, who does the youth and the first team. We've got a good team, and we know how to work with the youth, and we know how to switch on and work with the first team. And I think that's important, that we make sure that the two are separate but are linked, and we can bring them together when we need to, but make sure we concentrate on what's needed when we're working with either the first team or the youth team.
So what would you say is what's the key thing that you bring to Histon as a manager? What's your philosophy around management?
I've got to be honest, I've got a lot to learn in management. I really see myself as more of a head coach at the moment.
Yeah.
Because on a day-to-day basis, I'm still out there, I'm still on the field, I still take most of the training sessions. Even when I'm not directly taking it, I'm in and around it. making sure that each individual knows what I want them to do. So I'm probably more of a head coach still at the moment, trying to do the managerial stuff to the best of my ability. You know, I'm never going to say that I'm the finished article. I've got lots to learn. I'm like the players. I'm 33 years old and very young in this game. And the only real experience I have is in youth, and I'm gaining experience on a daily basis. You know, working with the first team, and you know, a massive thank you must go to David Livermore for the time that I spent under him. I learned a lot, especially from his playing days and what he'd learned from the great managers he'd worked under. And, you know, I still speak to him on a regular basis. I'm still in regular contact, and I can still ask him questions when need be. So, you know, my philosophy is, you know, if we can bring youth through, you know, that's got to be the best thing for this football club. I like my teams to pass. I like my teams to play passing football. I like them to defend with energy and press the ball whenever possible. But, you know, will that always be the case? I can't say that, because, you know, I'll develop as a manager. I might see new ideas, might think of new things. At the moment, I believe what we're doing is right. And if I can keep developing and I can keep pushing myself, hopefully that will keep pushing the lads and the team and this football club forwards.
Yeah, and do you see a bright future for the club longer term?
I do. I really do. If we can continue to iron out the small issues off the field, and I said this earlier on in the interview, that the board that are in place are doing an unbelievable job to do that. So we can continue to develop off the field. With the scholarship scheme we've got in place, with the first team players we've got at the football club, I'm sure that we can continue to develop as a club. And I was asked at the start of the season what would be success this year, and I said, as long as the club can continue to develop, and if it's only one place and one point above what we got last year, that is a small development and it gives us something to build on. And I think we're doing that at the moment. If you look at the position we're in now to what we were last year when I came in on the field, it's far better. Do we want to continue for it to be better? Of course we do. If you look at the position that the club's in off the field to what it was last year when I came in, it's unbelievably better. And I think if everybody at this football club sticks together and continues to work together, we can continue to push it forward.
Brian Page, thanks very much, and all the best for the rest of the season.
Thank you.
So
excellent.
It was a really good interview, and he's a really nice bloke. Hopefully they're going to try and sort us out somebody for talking about history.
We might even get more Brian Page on this show.
We might indeed. Yeah. So that's it. We've got to rush off now. We've got live guests in Strummers and Dreamers next, yeah. I think.
Yeah. Ooh, certainly. Yeah, stay tuned for Strummers and Dreamers anyway, and the whole world of folk.
Thanks very much to everyone for listening, and we'll see you all hopefully having watched some football next week.
We're so
we'll finish with Hello Darling and Neil Armstrong. That sounds so awful when I say Hello Darling.
Yeah, please don't.
There we go.